That's what I was going to ask about, the recording in progress. Thank you very much. Okay, we're going to open the Planning Commission meeting for July 28th, 2021. In response to the Governor's Proclamation 20-28, the Planning Commission will hold all of their regular and special meetings via Zoom video conference until further notice. Before we get started, I'm going to tell you that there's going to be a couple of administrative, not administrative, let's call them procedural changes. Doug England correctly advised me after our last meeting that we do not need motions to adjourn the meeting on a regular meeting according to Robert's Rules of Order. I did research it, and he is, of course, correct. So we will not need a motion for that as long as everyone agrees that all business has been completed. The same is true for the minutes. We do not need a motion to accept the minutes as long as all corrections are brought up and agreed to, and then we can just accept them as corrected or as published. So you can plan on that. So the first order of business will be the roll call, and we'll see who's here. Ryan Kelso.
Present.
Vicki Malloy.
Here.
James Wiggs. Doug England.
Here.
Bob Lum is here. Jim Newberry. Ed Martinez.
Here.
Joel Walensky.
Here.
Okay. Next order of business will be the minutes. No? Yes, minutes. Yes. Sorry. Are there any corrections, additions, or suggested changes to the previous minute? Okay, not hearing any, we will consider the minutes to be correct, and they can be published. Next item is the public comment period.
Just a point of order. I'm sorry. I just want to make sure that we all approve the agenda, because I just have a question about the current agenda.
I don't think that's something that we approve or we don't approve, but if you have a question about it, that's an administrative matter, ask away.
Okay, thank you. I guess we basically had an Exhibit D, CPA 21084 as an attachment. Is that part of the 2021 Comprehensive Plan Amendment Workshop?
Mr. Chairman and Commissioners, yes, it'll be the new business. We'll start the comprehensive plan amendment discussions, and the first one that we shared with you is the climate grant.
And the climate grant is part of the comprehensive plan amendment workshop?
Yes.
Or is that something we need to approve?
No, this will still just be a workshop, and then it'll come back to you at a public hearing.
Okay. Okay, because there does seem to be a land use application form on there. Okay, so, all right, thank you very much.
Okay. I have not looked to see if we have any participants that are part of the public. It doesn't look like that, but we'll say it anyway. If there's this is a public comment period, and anyone wishing to make a comment on anything that is not on the agenda, this would be your time to do it. And not hearing anything, we will proceed then to old business, the 2021 Draft Zoning Code Amendments Workshop. And I will pass this on to staff. You have the floor.
Thank you so much, Mr. Chairman, and good evening, commissioners. So let me just take a moment to share my screen. All right. So as you may remember, last month we kicked off our workshops for this year on both zoning change amendments and comprehensive plan amendments. So I wanted to follow up with a few more of the code amendments. And then later on, after we go through these, we'll pass it over to our consultant with Burke, who will talk to us a little bit about the climate grant. So before I move on, though, I wanted to first ask, did you have any questions from last month? So we did give you the PowerPoint from last month, and I just want to make sure if there were any questions, maybe in particular about the Wenatchee UGA, because we do have our consultant with us this evening. If there were any questions we could field about that before I move on to some more details about other code amendments that we will be bringing forward. All right, so I'm not hearing any questions, so I will move on then. So this is the schedule that we've put together to kind of help you envision what's going to happen for the rest of the year here. So in August, we will do the rest at a workshop. We will share the rest of the comprehensive plan amendments that we received from the public so that you can get an introduction to what's being proposed. And then we'll probably have a hearing on some of the code amendments that we've been discussing. Then in September, we will do a workshop so that you can learn about the City of Chelan's UGA, urban growth area amendments. And then we'll continue our CPA workshop if it's needed. We'll probably have a hearing on some of the additional code amendments. And then we will also hold a hearing for the urban growth area for the City of Wenatchee. And just a heads up, it's going to be a very large packet. Just the Wenatchee stuff alone, we figured is over 600 pages. And then in October, you'll have your public hearing for the comprehensive plan amendments that are proposed. And then you'll also have your hearing for the City of Chelan urban growth area. And then if all goes well by November, we are actually gonna have ask the fire marshal to come to our meeting in November so that he can talk to you a little bit about the wildland urban interface code. So that's kind of what we have envisioned for the year. So I don't know if you have any questions before I jump into the some of the code amendments. Any questions?
Yes, Catherine, I have a question. Is this schedule in line with what the commissioners discussed two meetings ago, not yesterday, but the week before, as far as the schedule for what they wanted to prioritize?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for that question. Yes, we did visit with the board last week about the docket, the 2021 docket. So these are the items that were on the docket that they would like us to continue to focus on. And the schedule, this just means you can imagine that we will start going to the board and doing hearings with them after August, you know, as items start moving along so that we can start bringing things to them for final action. And hopefully everything will be done by the end of the year as planned.
I thought that the livestock issue was a high priority item. Is that in here that I'm not seeing, or?
Yes, it was in the presentation last month. And then
right.
When we start bringing forward the code amendments in August, it'll either be in your August or September packet for code amendments.
Okay. All right. So this, when you say the code amendments hearing, that's just a general phrase for one or more code amendments.
Yes, it's the the series of anything that's changing the actual regulatory tool, and the other is our changes to the comprehensive plan.
Right. Thank you very much. I appreciate that.
All right. So one thing we didn't get to touch on too much last month was some of the details of the limited amendments. And again, these are things that we collect over time. We get feedback from customers. We get feedback from staff that there are areas where we need to do additional clarity or resolve conflicts in the code. So these are a few of the areas that we were going to bring forward. So the first had to do with definitions. And we have these terms that we will be bringing forward for your consideration to add to the code, and it'll be microbrewery, rebuild, reconstruct, remodel, replace, and treehouse. So as far as the microbrewery goes, right now in winery, in our definition of winery, we do mention distilleries and breweries that for the purposes of where they can go in which zoning districts they're allowed, that they are synonymous with a winery. So that means that you can have somebody who would be perhaps growing a vineyard, and that they can have an addition, they can have a tasting room with their production facility, and we have regulations and standards for that. So if somebody also, for example, wanted to do a microbrewery, you can see that the definition of winery envisioned it, but we just didn't have a separate definition of what a microbrewery is. So again, this is more of a small scale operation. We're not talking a large industrial producer or a large beer producer like a Budweiser or Coors. We're talking more at the scale of a smaller scale operation, and that would be appropriate in some of these zones. Yes, Ed.
Yes, thank you. I was just wondering if you could give me an example of the difference between a microbrewery, like would Icicle Brewing Company be a microbrewery? Or would Doghouse Brewery be a microbrewery in this definition? Like 15,000 gallons, what is that?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Commissioner Martinez. The 15,000 comes from the state's liquor control board. That's what they would classify as a microbrewery. I can certainly look into some of the local operations that we have and see where they fall. Again, this is something where again, somebody who's manufacturing at a smaller scale might want to have a tasting room and be located in one of our rural rural areas, but not necessarily a large production facility.
Okay, thank you.
And I'll see if I can find out more about some of our local operations. The next definitions had to do with, we'll call them all the R's, rebuild, reconstruct, remodel, and replace. And I know you had some discussion about this terminology earlier in the year. So what we'll be proposing is for rebuild, it'll simply cross-reference to reconstruct. Reconstruct means to construct again and would include demolition. A remodel is really where you're making changes to the structure, but you're not altering, you're not doing a structural alteration where something, a supporting wall or something that's needed for the actual structure of a home. And it's not an addition, an enlargement or an addition, it's a remodel. And then replace means to put in a new structure in the place of an old. So we just wanted to share these ideas with you. You may not have feedback today, but that you'll have an idea of what's coming forward.
So I have a question.
Yes.
Sorry for the delay here, but the 15,000 gallons.
Yes.
On the microbrewery, is that does the microbrewery consider on sale premises or off sale?
I believe they can do the on sale and sell it for distribution. That's what I recall from the definition. But I will look at on and off sale.
Okay, appreciate that.
Yes. So were there any questions about the remodel, rebuild?
I have a question just in general.
Uh-huh.
This is in addition to the paperwork we received, isn't it?
Yes. This I will follow up with this presentation afterwards so that you have what we went through today. But again, when you get your formal packet, you'll have a staff report. You'll have all the showing of the code, how it would be amended, so you can see the before and after. So you'll have, this is more to try to introduce the topics to you so that you can start thinking about either questions you have today or questions you have when it comes forward formally.
Catherine, is there a possibility of getting a copy of this emailed to us?
Yes, I'd be happy to do that after tonight's meeting.
Thank you very much.
All right, and the last definition I was going to share would be treehouse. And again, this is just to provide some clarity to these structures that people are kind of more like a play structure that people provide. You know, they're not intended to be very large. They treat it as an accessory structure. They don't need a building permit because they're under this size, but they're also not habitable structures. They're not intended to be used for a residence. So we will be adding, bringing that forward for your consideration.
Interesting.
Yeah.
All right. And so the next topic I would like to share in the code amendments relates to the district use chart. Get to that. All right. So in our code, we provide a definition of what an accessory use or an accessory structure is. And we also provide definitions in the building code. So both the zoning code and the building code refer to accessory structures in a very similar way, which essentially they're intended to be incidental, subordinate to the principal, to the primary home or residential structure on the lot. So in our code, we have this footnote, and it looks like, as far as I can tell, it was put in the code in about 2011, that kind of says the contrary to what the definition says. So we will be recommending that this footnote be deleted because it conflicts with the definition and it conflicts with what the building code would allow. So our experience has been that a high percentage, I would say about 90% of times when we get somebody who wants to do a garage or a shop or an art studio, and they want to do it before the primary house is built, that they become illegal conversions to dwelling units. And what happens then is the future buyer of that parcel ends up with an illegally converted garage, which then prevents them from being able to build their single family home. So it's become really obvious that there's been this conflict because of this footnote, and we need to rectify that. So a use or a structure cannot be classified as accessory unless the primary residential dwelling exists. So this topic we will be bringing forward.
And then Catherine?
Yes, sir.
So where are, you're saying that you're seeing a lot of these people are building these accessory structures that are being permitted as garages. And then you're saying that they're being converted into habitable spaces and then they're being sold to a new property owner, or they are putting in for a new residence at a later date, and then they're having it's becoming a secondary, which I completely understand. But however the end up wording is, I don't think we should be limiting people to what they put on their property as far as structure, saying that they have to put a residence on there before they can put a storage building on their property.
Might add something there.
Sure.
I get where you're going with that, Ryan. And at a conceptual level, our building official came into the department after 34 years of experience feeling the same way. And when he got to about the 75% point of, and that's not an exaggeration, of the number of permit applications that were coming in, that when looked at the plans, had all of the requisite infrastructure within them to put in bathrooms, kitchens, hours, smoke detectors wired into supposed storage spaces, and all of these things, it was apparent at that high rate that we had a large number of these that were being built, claimed as an accessory structure, permitted as an accessory structure, not for residential use, but were clearly in line to be then put into use for a residential use later, but without our knowledge. And then they come back later and put in for a building permit. And if we don't catch it, they wind up with two structures on there. And so we have been conditioning permits with numerous notes to make it clear that those accessory structures are what they are. And the building official can explain the, when we get to that point in a future meeting, the building official can explain the problem statement better than I can. But Chris has done 180 degrees on this, and it's the only jurisdiction in the six jurisdictions he's worked in his entire career that this has been occurring and has been allowed to occur. And it runs counter to the building code as well, not just the land use code. Actually, what we're doing here is aligning the land use code to match up what's already in the building code.
Well, it must exist in other counties as well, because I'm dealing with other jurisdictions where we do garages or shop buildings, and then, you know, same thing, individuals bought a property planning that they're going to build their permanent home in a future date, but they create a place where they can store their stuff basically until they get the stuff built up so that they can move or relocate potentially to this area, or relocate from one property to another as they're saving money.
But I can take you to the assessor site and show you a very large percentage, and I'm not talking 10%, I'm talking like 50% or better, where the tax assessor's photos show that those are no longer garages 5 years later, the vast majority. And so it is a problem of scale, and we're trying to figure it out. And maybe this isn't the answer to get there. Maybe there's some other alternate path, like I think you're suggesting, be explored. And I think that's fair. That's the purpose of the Planning Commission, to do that. But I just want to make it clear that this has got over. We have people now that are buying property that they then come in and want to do something with. And because the prior owner has screwed around with how they dealt with it, we can't issue permits, or we've got a second structure that's larger than 1,200 square feet, because that first structure was built larger than 1,200 square feet, which is the maximum for an accessory dwelling unit, not accessory structure, accessory dwelling unit. And then that same original owner went in and built a house. We didn't catch it. They come to us with a site plan wanting to put in a swimming pool and get a permit for it. And we now have an oversized accessory dwelling unit and a primary dwelling unit. And frequently, they're not living in either one. They're living off-site in another location, which is also a violation of county code. So it's been a real mess. It's not been we're dealing with one or two off. It's been a huge problem.
I understand, I guess, I do agree that they shouldn't be living in them if they're not permitted that way. And so I completely agree with that. But at the same time, I know there are many out there that do it the right way. And I don't like continuing to penalize those that do things the right way for things that others are that are doing it incorrectly.
No, and we can do that, but it can be involved then with, and again, we're actually going down the path here as if we were actually addressing this issue tonight. We're not, but there might be pathways, and we're looking at such as notices to title and things like that, so that a buyer would know when they got it that the other structure is not a dwelling unit and shouldn't be a dwelling unit, or something like that. And I think we can have that conversation when we actually are discussing this. But we one way or another, we need to get our arms around it, because it's the property investor, the owner, that is getting hosed in this deal, because they now own a property that they bought unwittingly, and they can't do anything with it. They want to sell it again, they can't get a bank to loan on it, a whole bunch of things. So that we're trying to protect the investment, just not just be a regulatory troll in the road here.
Wow.
I just hope that, and I think what Ryan's saying is that as we go through this, that a guy like me that wants to put a pole barn on my property and there's nothing else there, and all I want to do is store my boat there, that isn't somehow prevented. And I kind of think that's what Ryan is talking about. But you guys are going to develop this, so.
Well, isn't that really what they're doing is breaking the law, right? By basically doing what you said. But is there a relationship between, you can only lay down rules and laws, and if they're going to be broken, they're going to be broken no matter what rules and laws you have. But I was wondering, I know that the tax assessor does go around manually going from lot to lot occasionally and seeing if there's any improvements to the point where they need to basically reassess what they need to tax. Is there a cross-reference between what the assessor has currently looked at and what's been permitted on a particular property?
Yes and no. It's typically, yes and no. And I think we save that conversation for when we're actually dealing with the code. But the problem is these people put in plumbing and electrical and then seal it up in the walls. And whether they're intending to build a house out of it later or not, you've created the scenario where it does wind up happening. And so they've essentially created a primary use that they're trying to pass off as an accessory use. So I would suggest that we table this for the actual time that we get into this in detail, and then make sure we have the building official be a participant in that as well.
And to make it more complicated, the STR issue is, in the Manson area at least, is folded into all of this.
Yes, it is, and I intentionally didn't say that, Doug.
I'm curious now.
The rabbit trail, but yes, this actually ties into STRs as well, and many of these multi-unit STRs on lots are this exact scenario is how it came about.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's how you guys discovered it.
We do have to take into account, though, that there are the right people that have a storage building where they can purchase materials in advance for their home, and they have a place to store it on site. We have to accommodate that somehow. But
there's other alternatives. There's Connex trailers. There's things like that that we can provide for in the code. If it's truly a temporary storage, and then they can build the accessory garage at the same time they build the house. There again, that's a conversation we can have for a different day, but we've already been talking about the options that are available to folks. It's not to foreclose every option. It's to try and create a situation where the illegal dwellings are not being built.
Okay.
Right. And I look forward to seeing that code. I think staff understands what we're getting at there. And I think we understand what staff is telling us. So let's continue.
Thank you, commissioners. It is really helpful to hear your dialogue so we can start to refine the information and come up with other ideas and options. All right, so moving on to the next topic is substandard lot sizes. So a substandard lot size is really one that doesn't conform to the zoning district standards. So for example, in rural residential 5, the minimum lot size is 5 acres. And I just gave you a little snippet there, graphic showing you can see all those properties zoned RR5, and many of them are undersized. They are substandard. They don't meet the 5 acre minimum. So essentially we have some provisions in our code that result in staff having to sign off on the approval of these substandard lot sizes that don't meet the minimum. And these provisions, they're zoning district standards that they end up circumventing our standards, and they circumvent basically the requirements we have for platting a lot, for subdividing lots. And so we wanted to bring this issue forward to you. In some instances, these lots end up being not served by roads or infrastructure properly. They're not triggering subdivision standards. And again, similar to the accessory structure issue, they create sort of these unintended obstacles for future home buyers of these lots. So one of the things we'll be looking at is to actually delete the lot size reduction provisions that have increased the number of substandard lots and often made lots even more or even less conforming to the code than they are today. We would retain the longstanding provisions that we have in the code for owners of land with agricultural uses so that they could continue to split off the home from the orchard, for example. So those provisions we would retain. And then we would be bringing forward some revisions to the language in boundary line adjustments, which again has made lots even smaller than they started out as, and essentially less conforming. So this is a topic, again, we'll dive in deeper and you'll have the full language in the code, but I just kind of want to get you start thinking about these issues. And just so you know, these are kind of the things that we deal with on a day-to-day basis that can be very problematic. So
essentially,
yes,
there will not be really any, I mean, currently there really is no difference between an RR 2.5 and an RR 5, right? But you do not intend to basically take away all of those particular definitions and then reassign what currently is there. Is that correct?
Well, in those sections of in the zoning districts that I mentioned there, 1108, 10, 12, and 14, there is a provision that allows for this lot size reduction. That's what that's the only part we'll be looking at.
I see.
And we're going to be recommending that you delete that provision where there, sorry, I'll stop there. Did you have anything else, Commissioner?
No, why did you stop there?
I felt like I was going to start repeating what I had just said. So
okay.
It's under a section of what can be modified one time. And we've always had the provision for agricultural uses, but there's a second one that also relates to lot size reduction that we're going to be asking you to consider deleting.
Thank you.
Are there a lot of I guess we just to answer it straight, you're not changing anything that's currently RR5 to anything new.
We're not rezoning anything.
Right.
That's
yeah, correct. That's right. But the RR5 just basically is the RR5 and the RR2.5 effectively are the same thing because of these lot standard sizes that occur within them. Is that right?
Mr. Chairman and Commissioners, that's certainly one way that you could look at it, but we're talking about all the districts, RR20, RR10, RR5, and RR2.5, all have a provision that relates to this lot size reduction. And I could have shown you a picture of RR10, and it would have been very similar in terms of you have a variety of lot sizes that have resulted that do not meet the minimum standard. So if the minimum is 20 acres, you'll see in RR20, there are numerous lots that do not meet that standard. And part of it is the reasoning is because of these provisions that allow them to reduce even smaller. And again, which just fundamentally does not comply with our vision of our community of how land uses are going to be distributed.
Right. So just another, I'm sorry for basically belaboring this particular issue, because I am interested if a one lot, one sublot, that's 1 acre in R2.5, does it have different limitations or, easements that a 1 acre lot in an RR5 or an RR20 have?
They could possibly have different setback standards.
Interesting.
But yeah, I think, Ed, I think that regardless of the lot size, if the zoning is, whatever the zoning is, it has, they have to follow the regulations for that zoning, regardless of what the lot size is. I think all they're looking at here is, and we've actually seen in our area several applications where people want to take a 5-acre piece in an RR5 and cut it into two pieces, and then they can sell it as two different pieces. And by the current code, they can do that one time. But now you end up with two pieces that are 2.5, or maybe one's two and the other one's three, and they don't meet the 5-acre lot size.
But they do have different regulations, I guess.
They're still governed by the RR5 zoning regulations.
Okay. I know that in the SCRs, we basically lumped all the RRs together, right? I remember that.
Well,
and then the ones that had special provisions were the RWs and the RRR, et cetera. So, okay.
All right. Well, thank you for the questions. And moving on then, so as I mentioned, next steps before I turn this over to Lisa to start our new business, is we will be scheduling and noticing the public hearings and publishing staff reports and a meeting packet for you. So starting in August, we will start holding our public hearings, and eventually you will be asked to take action to recommend to the Board of County Commission either approval or denial of the request. So that is all I have for you in terms of new business, Mr. Chair. If you have anything else on this one, and then—
Was that new business or old business?
This was old business.
Okay.
This is Vicki, may I ask? When we start getting into the big stuff, August, September, and we have a lot of reading material, can we advance the date that we receive the information to study even further out so that we can have more than 2 weeks to study it?
That's a pretty big challenge, Vicki. I mean, I understand you need more than 2 weeks, but we have things sequentially lined up, and for us to now jump back and have Catherine produce staff reports and everything for you another week earlier than that means the stuff she's working on right now has to get pushed aside in order to deal with that too. So okay. 2 weeks is about the most we can do. I'm sympathetic. I'd like to be able to do that, but I literally don't think we could do it if we wanted to.
It's an unreasonable request. I understand.
No, it's a reasonable request that I can't reasonably meet.
Right.
So just a comment, a lot of that 600 pages, I believe, has to do with the Wenatchee changes in the code. And all that stuff has been through a public process, if I'm not mistaken. All that stuff has been recorded and brought through changes in code by the city of Wenatchee. And what they're asking is within the urban growth district, those codes get adopted by the county. Is that correct?
Mr. Chairman and Commissioners, yes, that is correct. And okay. So the packet is essentially the file of record that went through their process. That's why it's so large. So that's why we've been trying to distill out the key issues for you in the last PowerPoint, and then we'll try to do the same in the staff report. But you're essentially, we need to provide you the full file of record.
Thank you.
I gotcha. We're not gonna nitpick. We're not gonna find each line. And like we did at one point with one of the other projects we were working on. So I understand.
It would be more high level, as in, are you going to agree to adopt that city provision, whatever it is, into the county UGA?
Okay.
So you have to, you know, like get into the weeds of what it, content is, but I would suggest it might be easier to look at it at a more conceptual level. If they're requiring this wide sidewalk and the county standard was this size sidewalk, is that okay to you? That kind of thing, not what the reason was why the sidewalk changed widths or whatever.
Okay. Thank you. Jim.
Yeah, and I want Catherine to be able to present with this, but where it involves additional staff time, I feel compelled to step in. Part of the reason, and this is a fall on the sword moment for my predecessors, part of the reason we're in this position is we're 3 or 4 years behind on process for adopting the city codes. And this should have been done in earlier cycles. And so this packet's bigger because we're trying to close the gap and get current so that as we move forward, when the cities make changes, we're caught up.
Good. Yeah, I noticed some of them were from 2017.
Yeah, and that's not acceptable, but we are where we are. And so Catherine's doing her best to get us caught up.
Good, thank you, Catherine.
You're welcome. So Mr. Chairman, if you're ready, we can go ahead and move on to new business, if you like.
Yes, please.
Okay, so Lisa Gruder with BRRC is here today. And Lisa, did you want me to share the screen or were you going to?
I can do that, but I think you might need to let me do that.
Oh, that's true. Did that work?
Yes. Can you see it now?
Yes.
Yay.
Okay, great. And good evening, commissioners. So I'm here to give an overview of the Chelan County Climate Resilience Strategy. And through that effort, the county also received some grant funding to integrate some of the resilience strategy concepts into the comprehensive plan. And so that's what's before you in your packet. Some of you may have been following or attended some of the meetings related to the climate resilience strategy over the last couple of years. But just to give you a little background, the county had been partnering with a number of agencies and community groups, and that included the PUD and state DNR and a number of other local and state groups to help think about what it means to be prepared for and adapt to future climate-related changes in Chelan County. And then last year, the county had an opportunity to seek a grant. They were small grants. The state gave out 5 of them. They were $20,000 each. And the idea was to start integrating climate change policies, resilience strategies into the comprehensive plan. And so the grant was for 4 activities. The first task was to identify trends and conditions, and then to audit the comprehensive plan and identify some potential comprehensive plan policies, which either could be in their own element or could be integrated into each element. And that's what the county chose in the grant application, was to integrate in each element. And then to go through the public and legislative process. So those are the steps we followed. And we started late last year with the Chelan County Department of Natural Resources. And my company, BRRC, was hired to help with that. So identify trends, audit the plan, develop the draft comp plan amendments, and do the docket application material. And because we wanted to make sure to be in the docket in time to help meet the county's docket process and the grant needs, that's why our material includes an application form and a CEPA checklist. And it had all of the products that came out of each of these steps. The very last part of the packet is actually the proposed language, you know, that's for the comprehensive plan, but we had to follow these steps as part of the grant. So one thing I wanted to point out is Chelan County, even before getting into the resilience strategy effort the last couple of years, has, I think since for a number of years, included in the county code some climate policies. And I think they were adopted long enough ago that I hadn't been aware of them until we did this process, but the county has in chapter 13.2, greenhouse gas reduction policies, and that covers outreach and transportation, land use, coordinating with other agencies. And so that was one source of information or policy that we could look to that the county had already enacted. There's another part to this chapter that gets at the county's intent to try to have energy efficient buildings and things like that. The other part we looked to was this multi-partner coordinated strategy. And I have the link to it at the end of the presentation, and it's in your packet. But there's a 40-page draft strategy that looks at the effect of climate change in terms of wildfire, snowpack and streamflow, flooding and water supply. And then for each of those topic areas, there's some information on trends and changes and potential impacts. What are some current initiatives? Because the county and a number of other agencies have already been working on some of the issues that the county is facing. And then what are some of the strategies? And there's a recognition that some of the strategies to respond to, adapt to climate change really cut across a number of subject areas. So it could be around hazard response, emergency response, or public health or things like that. And then there's an implementation strategy as well to start a roundtable and start to draw the, you know, move from vision to action on the climate resilience strategies. So this is what that document looks like. And at the end, I have the link to it, but this is just an example of some of the strategies that are in this 40-page document. So creating fire adaptive communities, protect critical facilities, coordinate and improve emergency preparedness. Some communities in Chelan have already adopted plans to address fire and others haven't, but this is a strategy that's countywide. Snowpack and stream flow, a strategy would be to collect more local data from which you could then identify what needs to happen in Chelan more particularly. But even to collect some of that data, it would mean getting permits and installing some infrastructure in the federal lands. Flooding, evaluate and improve stormwater management and infrastructure for high intensity events and water supply, drought planning for increased water conservation. So these are just examples across those four subject areas.
Alisa?
Mm-hmm.
The question dealing with the wildfire elements there, because in our scheduling there, it looked like maybe in November that the fire marshal is going to come talk to us about stuff with the wildfires and et cetera and the WUI codes.
Mm-hmm.
With the direction of that, wouldn't that already be implementing and heading towards the resolution of this versus, I don't know, I just don't want to go down a road of we're creating a new layer of bureaucracy or codes and stuff when we've got others that are there. And if we already have those in existence, creating something new and you're not taking care of what we already have created.
Yeah, that's a good question. And we do reference in the strategy, the WUI code as one way of implementing. And part of the purpose of this strategy was to pull together what's already happening and what's left to do. And it was also meant to kind of help the county maybe seek funding and leverage other work that people are doing. So it wasn't necessarily to set in motion all new activities. It was to try to coordinate across agencies and to kind of implement across the county. And there's more, I would say there's more to do in the wildfire section beyond the WUI code, but that is one activity that would help implement. And that's partly why in the proposal, when the county went for the grant, there was a push more to do targeted changes to the comp plan to integrate some of the resilience strategy, recognizing that the county has had some policies in place, and just to make selected amendments in these elements to kind of integrate some of these activities rather than create a whole new chapter, for example. And so some of the policy topics are here on the right-hand side. And, you know, the county has had some water conservation policies. So the idea was not to duplicate a policy, but to try to look at some other strategies that came out through that process. So that's why it was more targeted and not trying to be repetitive, I guess. So that's the back end of your packet, has the more detailed language. You can find that strategy and other information about this multi-agency and community process that's been going on, including notes from different efforts, you know, meetings and engagement here.
Lisa, can I ask you a question? I yeah. probably missed this when you said it, but what is driving this? Is this a state requirement? DOE requirement? Why are we even talking about this?
Yeah, it's not a state requirement yet. The legislature came pretty close this last session to adding it as a requirement. I think the impetus behind it was the county was already engaged in this sort of multi-partner effort, and there was an opportunity with the grant to integrate some of that work into the comprehensive plan. So it's not being driven by a legislative must do, but I think the county, you know, having experienced a number of you know, fire in particular, and smoke and other events, you know, just wanted to acknowledge and put in, I think, some of the policies that are flowing out of this multi-agency process.
So I have a question also, similar lines. So we've done the wetlands and we've done critical areas, and most of that language that's incorporated in those reviews is reviewed by either the Department of Ecology or Department of Commerce. And they dictate a lot of the language in this.
Department of Commerce?
Well, the Department of Commerce or the Department of Ecology.
Yes.
And so what I'm saying is, so is this climate resiliency strategy also going to be dictated by one of those agencies, or does the county have the options of writing their own policy?
So the climate resilience strategy is a county effort, county and multi-agency effort. It's, I think, being driven by wanting to understand, you know, the conditions so that the county can be more prepared, leverage, you know, its resources and work with others to be responsive, I think, you know, and get ahead or at least respond effectively when there are issues. So this is really, it's not being driven by a legislative mandate.
I would not want to go down a road where we're creating another level of bureaucracy, period, of another level of anything such as that. If the state mandates that we go down this road, then that's one thing. But if we're not having to, I don't think we need to open the door to it to start integrating something that's not being pushed on us.
Well, I guess I would, you know, that's certainly a set of recommendations you could make, but maybe when we get through the actual language, you could see what appears to be, you know, worthwhile in terms of making effective use of county resources, you know.
So I guess along with Commissioner Kelso, I think the question is, do we get to actually write the language,
or yes,
is it being dictated by an agency from the state level?
You get flexibility in this language, and so what we've proposed is what kind of came out of this stakeholder process so far, but there's room for you to make changes. It's a place to start.
This is Vicky. I think the climate resiliency strategy is really acknowledging that there are things happening around us. We don't have to call it climate change because that's the political perspective. But climate resiliency strategy is us as a county saying, okay, we're having problems with wildfires. And these are the things that we can do to be able to lessen the effects of the wildfires, or say that we have a water shortage. And even though it appears we got plenty of water, we've got the Columbia River, but in actuality, what's happening is because of the horrible hot weather we've had, there's less water coming down from the mountains now because it was all melted during that short period of time. You know, things like that, they're strategies in dealing with the effects of weather, not necessarily climate change. And if we can come across with conservative approaches, which is our style, to dealing with these on a common sense basis, then so that would be something I would support.
Okay, so I don't know if any of you guys have read, you know, How to Avoid a Climate Disaster, that this was recently published, but I think one of the biggest elements that it's not being admitted across the board, not only here, but inside of this draft climate rules, is that it's human caused, and that it's basically like, you know, things that we do here as a committee are actually causing that as well. The things that we need to admit to, converting agricultural lands to urban areas increases basically the things that are happening. Converting forest rest to urban areas is causing these things to happen. You know, changing delicate areas to urban and decreasing the riparian setbacks is causing these, causing the waters to warm up and the fish to die. Just go down to the, basically to the confluence of the Wenatchee River and the Columbia right now. You're going to see 20,000 salmon floating dead because the water is too hot. And so for us to basically say that, well, we don't want to do anything more, is basically like it's not just kicking the can, but it's also right. going to be affecting us directly. So I think it really does need to be stated that we can do things to basically keep these things from happening. And the only thing that I'm seeing in this resiliency plan are mitigations to continue forward, basically converting, agricultural lands to urban, continue forward. And so we're basically trying to, you know, give it all to all these other agencies and create mitigations, expecting that it's going to happen. All the maps that you show in the subsequent panels, which I read through, show that we're basically going in a very negative direction. So doing business as forward, we cannot do. We have to make changes.
Okay, we're getting political here.
No, it's not political. Well, it's life or death.
let me interject, if you don't mind. I think there are a lot of very viable discussion points on causes and effects and who's responsible and those kind of things. But I would like to just say that we've listened to our staff tell us that how much time we have at the end of the year and what our time frame is to get a lot of things done that haven't been done. And if someone asked me to prioritize those things, this would not be at the top. So I have to question staff, and I don't even expect an answer tonight, but I just wonder why this has the priority that it has.
It has the priority, Mr. Chair, because it was reaffirmed last week during session with the board when we had a reprioritization discussion with them about the docket. So the board prescribes the docket that is used to set down the items that we are to bring to the Planning Commission under GMA in order for you to take up those issues. Right. So it's not optional for us, and frankly, it's not optional for the Planning Commission. It's in a sequence on the docket for us to bring to you. So the Planning Commission can decide and make a recommendation based on whatever a majority of you decide, but we have to bring it to you because it's in the docket and the board has requested it remain there.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I could maybe respond to the sort of scope of this a little bit.
Sure. Yes, please.
It is focused more on climate resilience because the intent of the grant application was to build off of the work that the county had been doing with agencies. I think to accomplish the things that Vicki identified is, you know, the county's experiencing some of these effects. So how can the county adapt? And so I don't think it is meant to be, you know, all encompassing about all the directions you could possibly go. It was born out of this other sort of stakeholder process around how can the county work with other agencies and locally to kind of proof where the county could, you know, help the community proof better against wildfire, flooding, and so on, and also coordinate recognition that the county is a rural county and has limited resources. How can the county partner with other agencies to do a better job to plan ahead and to respond effectively? So I think it wasn't intended to be a large, you know, effort that went in a lot of directions. I think once we get into the actual language, you can decide whether you're wanting that language or something else. But I think you'll see it kind of fits into your plan, and it clarifies and adds, you know, some strategies that I think are not hugely different than where you were, but it can help the county seek grants and continue to get the kind of information and seek resources, you know, to help prepare the county. There may be other efforts the county wants to do in the future that cover other topics around greenhouse gas. But right now, the intent was to focus more on resilience, you know, based on the couple year effort that had already been put into it.
And one final thought, Mr. Chair. Lisa touched on it there. You know, the critical areas ordinance, one of the things that were a time presser to get that done was because we had stormwater grants that ecology was holding because we didn't have that done. I can foresee where this is a foundational process where we may be required in future grant applications for other things that the county needs in the way of resources, whether it's implementation of a WUI code that's gonna be coming up in the next year, the wildland urban interface requirements or other things where they may require us to have a climate resiliency appropriate process code. So we are also trying to think ahead about that is the general direction the state's going, and like the federal government does to the state also does to the counties and says, well, we'll give you this thing that you need, but you have to have this thing over here in order to qualify for it. So we're trying to make sure that we are thinking about those things in advance as well.
Jim, so are these grants then dictating what we're seeing and what we're not seeing then as we're moving through all these elements? Because it seems like the money from the grants is dictating what we are reviewing along the way here.
No, that's not what I'm saying. And there's no indication that, if I'm understanding what your question is, there's no indication that this code is going to be used later in order to hold another grant process hostage. But this is a foundational process with regard to climate change regulation, and the state has requested that these issues be addressed by the counties. And so we wanna make sure that we are in a good position for, you know, they could mandate this. And they came close to mandating it, as was stated, came close to mandating it last year. So there's a high possibility that next year, especially given the drought conditions we had state and regionally, that could be the catalyst to get the couple of extra votes to make them mandated. We're here, we have it now, we have a grant to carry it forward. It seems like it would behoove us to consider getting it done now rather than when we don't have grant money to help us with it and it gets mandated later and we still have to bring it up.
Are there things that come along with this grant money that become things that you have to implement or do because you are accepting the grant money?
I don't know if Lisa can answer that.
The state didn't have any substantive content requirements. It basically said the county needed to choose how to put, you know, its strategies in place, whether it was a single element or across an element. It asked the county to consider information about both greenhouse gas and resilience, but our approach to addressing that was because the money didn't allow for any real new information, was just to look at other rural counties and what they are doing, since Chelan is a rural county, but focus mostly, and that's what the grant was about, was on the resilience side of things, because that's the that dovetails with the effort the county had already been putting into it. So I guess what I would say is they didn't say what the language has to be exactly. They just wanted the county to consider information, look at examples, and try to integrate, you know, climate resiliency into the plan. So you get some freedom in terms of what the language says, because the state didn't say you have to say it this way. Jim is right. I think that if not this coming legislative session, then shortly thereafter, there likely will be some requirements. But they're not in place right now, but the county would, again, the county was pursuing this because, you know, to leverage resources to help prepare for and respond to what, you know, effects the county was already seeing from water supply, stream flow, wildfire, all that. So it's a part of, I guess, managing, you know, within resources, and then again, seeking funding to get some of this data that the county needs, like on, you know, snowpack, so that the county can effectively plan for natural resources for the community. So I guess I'll just pause right there.
I think what we're struggling with is that here we find community development and staff getting ahead of the issue instead of constantly playing catch up, and well done for that.
Right. And it doesn't sound to me like we're talking about regulations we're putting into play, but instead methods on which we can respond to issues as they come up as relates to climate and all the things that fall under that.
Right. It's a policy level work.
Not regulatory.
Right. And I think the strategy already recognizes a lot of things that are in place either by the county or others. And so it's not trying to duplicate or create a new layer. It's really trying to, I think, dovetail into things that are happening so that, again, the county can make the best use of its resources to address, you know, the effects of these disasters or, you know, and some of it is sort of incremental and long-term, right? Around water, for example. So it's to benefit, I think, business and residents, you know, by trying to protect and manage resources.
I don't know what's happened in the last 7 months, but originally this was done for exactly those reasons, Lisa. Mike, for instance, is doing an extensive work on alluvial storage, the WUI work that's all being done. And I think it's following the same pattern that we're trying to do with the critical areas. We tried to push that in there in a way that we would get credit for what we are already doing, would give us points for future granting to be able to show that we do have a plan in place, and do it by actions we feel that we can live with, rather than a top-down order of what to do. You don't see things in this list as a study on removal of the Columbia River Dam. For instance, you don't see things like a carbon credit endorsements and things like that. These are things that we are trying to do. If we were in the 1970s, and it's worded as resilience, if this conversation was happening in 1970, we would be worrying about the coming ice age. Right now, we're worried about temperatures getting too hot. We want to do it in a way that we can live with, that responds to whichever way Mother Nature decides to do it. If we find things that we are causing that can do it, to guide around those things and not do them. But we're trying to do it as a whole approach. And like you say, do it before somebody top down tells us we have to.
Excellent.
Okay. Lisa, is that your presentation?
Yes. Happy to cover anything else, but I think tonight was just meant to be an overview of how. Right.
I have just a few more questions regarding the document. I noticed that, I guess it would be inside of the county, Chelan County, it does say basically, it says draft Chelan Climate Resiliency Strategy, October 2020. Is that the one we should be reviewing?
Yes, that's the last dated version.
Okay, and then I think even in page, if you look at page 6.
Of that October document, is that right?
That's right.
Okay, and I can pull that up on the screen if you like.
Yeah, pull up the whole page. I think it's important to see the whole page.
Page 6 is blank.
Exactly. Page 6 is blank. And that is basically, and the type, that the placeholder for letters of support, Chelan County Board of Commissioners. When will that be done? Or like, what are we looking at? Why is that page blank? How far along is this draft? I mean, it's like, and then what we sent here was the Exhibit B was what it looked like some sort of approval for a general land use application form. And yet it's like if we vote on this, we're basically voting to, you know, to sign the check and then leave the, you know, leave the, how much the amount open. I guess the question is, when will this placeholder be completed? How far along are we on this document that we can say this is very close to the end?
So it's a document that was developed over a 2-year process, and it was the subject last year of at least 2 rounds of input. And I think the idea is that the county wouldn't necessarily have to approve the strategy, but endorse it again as a multi-agency strategy that then could help the county seek grant funds. So it was pretty close. I think the county Department of Natural Resources is trying to get a roundtable together to start pushing, you know, forward more again on this. So I don't think the county is necessarily going to legislatively adopt it. I think the idea that Department of Natural Resources that the county has is that the board would, you know, support it as a multi-agency effort.
I see.
By going through the Planning Commission, what they're doing is they're getting our input into it. You know, any comments we have, and that's going to be included in their letter when they finally, you know, do something to finalize it. Am I right? Wrong?
Yeah, I think that's right, Vicki, is that this can help, you know, provide some direction. The idea was that it wasn't supposed to be a rigid framework. It was meant to be a flexible framework to say, here's what's going on. Here's who, you know, here's some ideas. Here's some folks that can help move this forward. And so it has like different roles that different agencies or community groups could play. It was meant to kind of bring things together in one place to say, there's a lot going on, there's a lot more to do, here's how you can help, and for the county to seek some funding and to show some of the partners, you know, that the county has some ideas to bring to the table. That was pretty much what it was for. It's not a legislative document so much as it is like a flexible framework, I would say.
When do you think we'll see this again?
I think the Department of Natural Resources at the county is trying to form a group to kind of move this forward. They're working on that right now. I'm imagining that before the end of the year, the Department of Natural Resources will ask the board to give that letter of support. I can let them know, you know, your questions and try to get a better handle on their sense of time, but I know they're putting out the invitations, and you can go to that web link that I put in the PowerPoint and that I think is in your packet in the fact sheet. And you'll see that there's been, I think, at two meetings last year, including deep dives into this strategy with some ideas on how to improve it, or, you know, how to start making things happen.
The links that I see on here, the natural resources one, that just shows these documents. And then the other one is just community development. That's the links that I see in your fact sheet.
Yeah, it goes to the natural resources project page. And yes, okay, there's documents there, but you'll also see there's a lot of meeting summaries and the stakeholders.
I see. Yeah, you're right. Thank you.
Yeah.
If I may add, Lisa, the materials are really background material, so that you have some context, and your focus will be on the actual language that may be proposed in as an amendment to the comprehensive plan. So those are near kind of the very end of her packet, but all the other material is just great background.
That's a great point, Catherine. And I would say again, I wouldn't get confused about the application form that's on here. The county tries to hold itself to a similar pattern as it asks private applicants. So we just submitted an application for a docket, basically, like anybody else would. It's a county-led item. But we filled in an application and put the material that would allow the county to, you know, review and process it. So it's not meant to be like a land use site-specific application. It's just a form that the county likes to have standard. So that's the only reason why it's in there.
Okay, very good. Do you have anything else for us, Lisa?
No.
Okay, is there any other new business to be discussed? If not, I'll just give you a review of some of the things that have happened since our last meeting. ZTA 2021-196, the Icicle Valley Design Review Overlay District Text Amendment, was passed by the commissioners. The other one is ZTA 2019-004, which we've already talked about a little bit, the short-term vacation rental code. I would encourage you all to go to the community development webpage and download the documents that they have put up there. It is the amendment and it is the final code. At least get yourself somewhat familiar with it, because I think you're going to find people are going to ask you a lot of questions. A lot of thanks to Jim Brown and the staff for getting everything put together. It's in place. I think they said they're going to notice Department of Commerce, and so the code won't go into effect until sometime towards the end of September. The 60-day notice, because there was so much change. And then, Jim, you can speak to this. You are going to start working on permits for 2022, not 2021. Is that correct?
Oops, we're going to, not anymore. We're going to start on September 27th when the code takes effect. We'll start accepting applications on a provisional permitting basis, with basic information that will need to be provided from those who are requesting to be grandfathered. If They can meet that basic information. Their permit will be brought in the door. They could possibly not wind up with a permanent permit, but we're developing a system where we can at least do essentially an over-the-counter permit with some brief verification of certain documents that they have, we know they have to have, and they should be able to produce easily. A bunch of things that declarations on the back or on a separate page, they'll have to swear to essentially initial all these boxes. And then the way the code was written is we have until June if it takes that long, and it won't, but we have until June if it takes that long in order to notify them whether they can continue on with a permanent permit or not. And if not, then they have 30 days to correct whatever's wrong or 30 days to shut down and cease operation. And now we've got all their information, so we know who they are. Then with regard to new, so those that could come in any place that we have a zip code, or in the case of UGA, if we're below the 9% there and the 6% in the other zip codes of the county, so for example, Antioch or Malaga, those people will be able to apply, but they will not be able to put in an application until December, and only for the 2022 year. We simply cannot handle the volume that we anticipate to come in just from the non-conforming. And so we pushed off the conforming out to the new year. And realistically, even if they applied in September with all those other permits, by the time we reviewed them, made sure they had everything, got on them about getting us this document or that document, they'd wind up getting a permit that's good for 2 weeks and then the year's over. So it's like, no, we're not going to do it that way. So the board agreed to that. That was my recommendation. I know it's disheartening for those who have STRs or are planning them and want new ones, but we just physically don't have a way to handle it. And so I'm looking long-term, not short-term. And so that's how we broke it apart. So Kristen's already working. She came in my office with a 5-page FAQ draft to put on the website. The web page is going to be completely revamped to address this issue. It may take us 30 days or more to get that. So we hope that 30 days from now, we'll have a more robust website and the ability to answer a lot more questions for those people who are inundating my email box with, what does this mean to me?
Excellent. Well, it was a long process, and a hearty thanks to everyone that was involved.
The commissioners didn't specifically call out the Planning Commission for their assistance, and I believe that was an honest oversight. They thanked the task force, but I want to take the opportunity to thank, on behalf of community development, the community, and I believe that I can speak for the county commissioners in this regard. Certainly for Doug, from when he was a commissioner, I think he would agree. The Planning Commission did a lot of work on this, taking it through about three different times. The first time, and then it got sent back, and then the first time it came through on the new, and then the whole issue that happened with that, where it came back yet again. So y'all that were here anyway, put a lot of work into this, a lot of heavy thinking, heavy discussions and everything else. And I want to thank you for your efforts in doing that.
Well, thank you very much. And I think we will benefit from the fruits of all that labor. In other news, you heard that the docket got reset by the Board of Commissioners, and we're seeing that now. Livestock is going to come up, and we've already been told that. I would ask that everyone take time to review our current code on livestock, look at surrounding counties, talk with your constituents. This is, as Jim said to the county commissioners, this is not going to be a trivial issue and will be probably a hot button issue, I think. So please try and take a little extra time and get yourself up to speed on that. Not necessarily a land use issue, but Jim got the county commissioners to agree to address the current noise ordinance, 7.35, I think. And it's very much needed, and he was very correct on that.
That won't that won't come to the planning commission because it's not a development regulation. It's just an FYI.
Any update on in-person meetings?
Well, we've actually been waiting for them to get the meeting rooms remodel stuff done, and there's still some last minute things that they're working on in the commissioner's office. I think we're close, and I would have said that we were close until Governor Inslee started walking back possible mask mandates for indoor. And so we don't know what that looks like yet. So I don't know, but we're certainly heading in that direction. I was thinking we might be there as early as August, but Inslee's revised guidance following CDC, I just read about it tonight, just came out, and I don't think any of us know what that means to us. Is that just for us? Is that for only certain counties that have certain levels? We don't know. But we're close. If it's not August and something doesn't blow up worse with COVID, I'm thinking probably certainly by September, because the remodel should be done at the commissioner.
Very good. Does anybody have any other business? Yes.
I will just say, I did see your code enforcement officers out in Leavenworth or the surrounding area. Big white trucks with code enforcement on them.
Yeah, big black letters, code enforcement. Okay. They're doing a great job. When I meet with them every Thursday morning, so I'll be meeting with them again tomorrow morning. They're working 33 different cases right now, and some of them are STR moratorium violations. So they're doing a really good job. They're having to re-advertise for a third deputy, but it sounds like there might be a good candidate and a retired former deputy that might fit that slot. And part of the whole STR planning process also includes a code enforcement response piece for all the new rules that are in the STR code. And I'm not prepared to talk about that right now just because I don't have all that fleshed out. But the two guys that are doing it, Bruce and Tim, are doing a fabulous job. And they've got a really good, mature demeanor in how they deal with folks. They're firm but fair. They seem to be using real good judgment, trying to get people to comply. But if they don't comply voluntarily, they're not hesitant to go to the next step.
Okay. And Vicki, did you have some?
Yeah, I wanted to go back to the current noise ordinance. I noticed,
easy for you to say.
Yeah, really. I noticed in the Wenatchee UGA information that they had were able to define or figure out a way to measure noise. And I was wondering, do we have that same thing that we can apply to not only the vacation rentals, but the machinery noise from, like, say, things like marijuana warehouses?
We already have.
That type of thing.
So we already have that. We have adopted in part the state wax, the noise wax from ecology for certain types of industrial activity, and I believe cannabis is one of them that we've adopted, but we haven't intentionally for things that could be inclusive of such things that you would not really think of as your neighbor's heat pump. And we don't want to be the heat pump police. And many jurisdictions have had a lot of problems when they've adopted that. There's a difference between adopting standards for development regulations that say you have to meet noise requirements and the noise ordinance in 7.35. So I don't want to conflate those two issues. I think what you're referring to are standards of development for types of equipment and noise nuisances versus noise nuisances that are more about human-caused noise nuisances. Loud parties, loud radios.
Oh yeah, for residential zones versus the intersect of industrial and residential.
Right. Typically, the industrial noise issues are handled through development regulations that are state WACs that are incorporated by adoption. The county would decide, you know, you've got a noise ordinance that lists such and such number, and then it's got letters A through Z. and the county makes a decision whether they're going to adopt them all or they're going to decide we'll adopt A, C, L, M, T, and the rest we're not going to do because of whatever reason. So right now, that example I gave you is what the county has done. They've cherry-picked which part of the noise ordinances for development that they've adopted.
Okay. Does anybody have any other business they want to bring up?
Well, I do have one more issue, and I hadn't got a call back from a call I had made previously, but what are the standings on the marijuana facilities that that aren't meeting code?
Can you be a little more specific of what you're asking, Vicki?
Well, I'm asking about my neighbors.
Well,
the smell that comes from their place, the fact that they're probably growing.
Is that one of the ones that we have that's in the Court of Appeals right now?
Yes.
That's what we're waiting for. We can't do anything until the Court of Appeals makes a decision on those cases. There's a Supreme Court case that we're waiting for ruling on. The Supreme Court heard the arguments on the case 6-8 months ago. And whether it's the case that you're referring to or yours is one of the other appellate cases, the other cases that were in the Court of Appeals, I think with regard to at least one of them, the Court of Appeals decided to stay their decision while they wait for the Supreme Court to decide the other case, because it might dictate where their ruling would go. So the bottom line is, there's not much we can do for those that are caught up somewhere in the appeal process. Now, others that are not, ones that are non-conforming, legal non-conforming, and there's only a couple of them, where we've had smell complaints on those, we have a provision in the code where they have to abate those smells. And in at least one case, I sent the first ever letter out to one of those. I went from getting a complaint about every other week on that place to getting no complaints whatsoever. So I'm assuming that the problem got taken care of. So we're willing to have code enforcement respond to those that we can, but the ones that are caught in court, there's not much we can do with them right now because the prosecutor's office has elected to not have us essentially pile on additional charges while they're already going through an appeal process. It just complicates the case.
I understand. It's been 6 years that we've been fighting this specific one, and we have had to smell.
They're not illegal here, but I've got one that's about 30 acres. It's 150 feet down and about an eighth of a mile from me that way. So I deal with the smell this time of year, just like you, an outdoor grow. I deal with it every day when I step outside. I get it.
Okay.
Thank you. Do we have any other business for the Planning Commission? If not, I call the meeting of the Planning Commission adjourned. We will meet again. When are we meeting again? August?
August 25th.
Okay, August 25th is when we're going to meet again.
All right. See you guys then.
Yeah, I would thanks everybody.
I would anticipate this is going to be Zoom again.
Yeah.
I would anticipate Zoom again at this point. And if something changes on that in short order, we will let you know.
Okay.
Bye, everyone. Thank you for your work.
All right. Thank you.